How are you doing?
Good evening, everyone. Back again, it's I, your fearless leader, Rick Adams. Uncensored Radio Free America right here on Republic Broadcasting Network. And indeed, your radio avenger tonight brings you another dynamite program, if I may use that term, pardon the pun, because tonight we'll be talking once again about, 911, 911, as they say. And we have two guests with us, scheduled to be with us in this hour. I think both of them are with us on the line, and they are calling from different parts of the country, and yet we're going to let them talk to us together about this common subject tonight of 9/11, and particularly one part of this puzzle that took place recently that really intrigues me, and that is this the so-called Saturday Night Massacre at Popular Mechanics magazine, New York, and what happened, the reason for it, and who exactly took over, and what's it all about, and why are we now being given certain disinformation from the publishers and the editors so that we might come to a conclusion that's already preconceived, primarily a conspiracy theory on the part of the government. Well, that's interesting. And with us tonight are two gentlemen who are no strangers to my programs in the past, and one of them, of course, Christopher Bolin from the American Free Press, and also Eric Hufschmidt, who has done quite a bit of research in the field of science and, of course, specifically 9/11, the publication Painful Questions and Analysis of the September 11th Attack and the DVD that goes with it. So let me just welcome both of you right now, gentlemen, to the program.
Thank you.
Hello there. Who's this, Eric?
This is Eric.
Can you hear me okay? Yeah, we can hear you now very well, thank you. Good to have you with us.
Well, it's great to be on.
Thank you. And also Chris Bolin, right?
Hello, yes.
Okay, yeah, no stranger. Well, Eric, we had you on my local program way back, about a year and a half ago or so, and, of course, we've interviewed another group of people over the same period of time dealing with their own particular investigations into 9/11. And, of course, both of you gentlemen tonight are going to discuss this very strange case that I guess has really attracted national attention. Was it the George Norrie show, Chris, that recently had on one of the people involved, one of the Chertoff family, I believe?
Yeah, that was Art Bell's show.
The Art Bell show, yeah.
And he had Benjamin Chertoff on, the senior researcher and the new research editor for Popular Mechanics.
And happens to be the cousin of Michael Chertoff.
Yes,
right?
And I found that out by doing a little poking around in the phone books in New York, and I talked to Benjamin Chertoff's mom and asked if he was related, you know, to the great Michael Chertoff of the Homeland Security Department, and she said, yes, of course, he's a cousin. And when Art Bell finally, I wrote an open letter on the internet, asking Art Bell if he would address this and some other questions, and he was therefore sort of forced to deal with it, but they sort of marginalized it by saying that Art Bell said something like he was the 14th million cousin, and Benjamin Chertoff himself said that even after speaking to his father, he didn't understand the relationship, as if the relationship went back into the dark recesses of Belarusia.
Well, they probably just met each other recently, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Hey, listen, we're going to pick up on that note and start the program in just a few moments. Stay where you are, gentlemen, and you, our listeners, call in tonight. You'll have a good chance. Rick Adams with you. Uncensored Radio Free America continues.
The Radio Avenger. Get even. better.
Uncensored Radio Free America.
Rick Adams is turned on
the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Okay, let's begin the program then in this hour that we have. You want to jump on the line? Let me give you the number again. 800-313-9443 is our magic number to get on the air with our two guests tonight. 800-313-9443. Again, Eric Upschmidt and, of course, Christopher Bolin. Chris is from the American Free Press. Where do I begin? First of all, how did this whole thing start, this mystery about a publication that seems to be quite innocuous in and of itself, Popular Mechanics? Either one of you gentlemen want to jump in here on this?
I can say something. Several months before the March issue came out, back in October, there began a purge at the magazine. And the senior editors and senior editorial staff were basically told that they had, in one case, an hour and a half to clear out. After 21 years working at the magazine, this is the former creative director of the magazine, number two on the editorial masthead, was told he had 90 minutes to clear out. And he said that after 21 years, they were so kind to let him come back and get his archives and things for 21 years. And now it's important to understand that Popular Mechanics is a Hearst magazine,
mm-hmm.
and it's the president of the board of the magazines is Kathleen Black, and she's married to a man named Thomas Harvey, who was former special assistant to the director of the CIA. And so it clearly what happened was they decided to turn Popular Mechanics into a technical rag that would advocate the government's position on 9/11 and on the war in Iraq and et cetera.
Now that's interesting because I had also heard from a friend, a local individual who also happened to be really a caller who had some government contacts, in fact, and he had said essentially the same thing you're saying. And when all of this appeared on the Art Bell show, it's interesting the way apparently the guest, Mr. Chertoff, was allowed to basically get on the broadcast and do an apologia for the government. And here's a guy who supposedly is in no way connected directly to the federal government, yet, as you know, we've said now, his cousin is involved directly with the Homeland Security and has been a fixture in the federal government for over two decades, right?
Yeah, and this. Well, Michael Chertoff, the new head Homeland Security czar,
right.
He was formerly Assistant Attorney General in charge of Criminal Division of the Department of Justice, and he had that position when September 11, 2001 occurred.
Mm-hmm.
And what's very important is that we had no criminal investigation. I mean, the American people had no proper blue ribbon criminal investigation of the events of September 11th,
mm-hmm.
and this is largely due to Michael Chertoff. For example, there were many Israelis who were apprehended. Some were apprehended right across the river from the World Trade Center, and they had been captured videotaping and celebrating, giving high fives and obviously celebrating the collapse of the World Trade Center.
Yes.
The FBI caught them, and these five men were found out to have been Mossad agents working with a phony company, a phony moving company based in Weehawken,
yeah.
New Jersey. And their moving van tested positive for explosives. And they had obviously prior knowledge of the attack, and they were sent home on visa violations. And so what we've had all along is we've had Israelis that have been apprehended in some way connected to the events of 9/11 have been sent home on visa violations. At the same time, some 800 Arab or Arab-speaking or Muslim Americans and visitors have been pushed away into some sort of concentration camp status simply because they are of the wrong religious background, what have you. It's
mm-hmm.
the whole thing, like Guantanamo, is a charade. It's to make the American people think that the Muslim and the Arab is our enemy, while the real culprits have been gotten off scot-free.
And Michael Chertoff himself was involved in the Justice Department at this time?
Yes, he was
okay.
The Assistant Attorney General
mm-hmm.
in charge of the Criminal Division of the Department of Justice.
Okay.
So he oversaw criminal investigations that should have occurred in September 11th.
And John Ashcroft ultimately had to make a decision then as Attorney General, right? And he made the decision to return to Israel these various individuals, as well as, I believe, a number of others, by the way, who were picked up as well.
Yes, as many as 200.
All the way through the area.
As many as 200 Israelis were picked up
yeah.
from Florida to Montana and Texas and Tennessee, driving these moving vans, or also these other Israelis who had been following these art students, these Israeli art students
posing as art students,
as
yeah.
art students who had been shadowing these Arab culprits.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. Now, of course, you know, this was corroborated, by the way, by the fact that I believe it was Fox News that originally reported the story. And then, mysteriously, within a couple of days or so, took down not only any reference to the story on their website, but then took down the whole, the whole story itself. I mean, just completely cleansed any reference or any way of going back to the story that they originally posted. And I believe it was Carl Cameron, who in fact was one of those that was asking questions at the time. And, boy, his tune changed rather quickly, didn't it, huh?
Right.
Yeah, this is an interesting case here. Now, Eric, you have done quite a bit of research in 9/11, not only the research that had to do with the obvious incongruities in the reports of the government and the 9/11 Commission, but also on many of the interesting scientific anomalies here in this whole situation from day one. What's your take on all of this?
Well, I think the reason that they had that Popular Mechanics article in the first place is that my book has been attracting a lot of attention. Well, not a lot percentage-wise, but, you know, enough
mm-hmm.
that they started to get worried, because Jimmy Walter, who is rather has a lot of money, he's a philanthropist, he
right.
decided to start advertising my book, trying to
yes.
get this information out. And that apparently is what caused somebody there to decide that they better do something to try to stop it. Because that's what, when Art Bell asked Chertoff, you know, why did you do this? He was mentioning Jimmy Walter and his advertisement.
Right, right.
So this is a sign that it may be that the people are starting to pick up on this information, and they're worrying, and they're trying to stop it, and they're using the people within the media that they have control over, apparently Popular Mechanics and Art Bell. And so it's interesting if you start looking at who in the media actually reports the news and who just seems to be doing what they're told. It's almost everybody that we know, in what we call a mainstream media, is just following orders. And
it's,
I think,
incredible.
This is
yeah.
it really brings up a big important point that most people don't even consider, is that the media is under control here.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that's obvious, isn't it?
Well, only to some of us. I mean, it's not to most people. It wouldn't have been obvious to me years ago, for example. But you see, it's only when you start realizing that they're lying, and then you look around at them all, and you realize all of them, and then it starts to make sense. Who is getting the promotions? Who gets the job at Clear Channel to be on the radio? Who gets the job to be on the TV? Who is becoming a reporter and who's not? And apparently, it's who joins the club. They get the promotions, and who can be blackmailed. And it looks pretty diabolical sometimes, because if you look at Art Bell, he's a good example. You know, in the year, I think it was 2000, Ted Gunderson was accusing him of something or other related to child pornography or child molesting. He disappears from the radio. He says he's quitting his radio show. Then he comes back a few months later, and all of a sudden he now supports the government. On not just September 11th, but he's insisting that Apollo landed on the moon, while at the same time he's promoting every kind of silly story about UFOs and crop circles and ghosts and goblins.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it starts telling you something. Here he is disappearing after these terrible accusations, and now he comes back supporting the government? It's mm-hmm. as if somebody went to him and said, here are the choices are. You go to jail or you do what we tell you. And see, this is what I think part of the reason they can have so much control over the media is the people who are getting promotions are the ones they've got something on. And they're holding it over their head saying, hey, you're going to do this or else. And you look at some of them, like Bill O'Reilly.
Mm-hmm.
There was accusations a little while ago that
yes.
he was not just having phone sex, but it was, you know, the woman didn't want it. He's doing it. He wants it. I mean, this is not really a crime, but it's embarrassing. You got accusations from Kay Griggs that George Stephanopoulos is hiding his homosexuality. You've got accusations out there that Ann Coulter is a man. I mean, there are... It looks as if the people who are getting promoted are the ones that are being blackmailed and bribed.
Mm-hmm.
But most people would never... It would never occur to you.
Well, the average public, John Q. public, I don't think anything occurs to them outside of what the latest ball game score is or what's the latest in the twist of events on Michael Jackson. So, I mean, the masses have always been basically sheep being led to the slaughter. That's true. But then again, of the 5 or 6% of the population that we would call rising above the masses, as Ortega y Gasset once said, probably would question at least some of the more blatant anomalies and inconsistencies in the official 9/11 story. After all, a record number of people went out and bought this book, the so-called 9/11 Commission Report, although the report itself was basically a skeleton of what was taken in before the commission, as you know. And then most of the testimony that would have come forth was deliberately kept off the radar screen by people connected to the Bush and Clinton administration. So here, you know, as the American Free Press pointed out, Chris, right from the beginning, you had a massive conflict of interest on the part of just about everyone connected with this commission. So we really didn't expect them to come out and tell the truth. Now, did we?
No, we didn't get a blue ribbon independent investigation, and this is a crime against history. And of course, the evidence was destroyed, and the investigation was controlled, and the outcome was predicted.
Right.
And,
okay.
And that's
listen,
what we're fighting
stay there.
Against.
We've got to take a break.
Yeah.
Don't say another word. We'll be right back with you and our guests, Christopher Bolin and Eric Huffschmidt, on Uncensored Radio Free America. All right, Radio Avenger. I'm back, Rick Adams, Uncensored Radio Free America. I guess everybody's trying to give us a call, so we're going to try to move along with the phone calls as quickly as we can, all right? And we have two guests on the line, and myself and a caller, so that sort of taxes our system here. Without getting too technical, it sort of puts a maximum burden on our phone system here when we're on the air. So hopefully we'll all equalize and we'll all sound well. But anyway, Eric Huffschmidt is one of our guests, of course, dealt with the 9/11 question, and of course, Christopher Bolin from the American Free Press. Our first call is from Gary from Tennessee. Hello, Gary.
How are you?
Okay, good. Get a question or a comment quickly?
I've got a question. I was wondering, I've kind of heard rumblings of Patriot Act 3 in the works. And I was wondering if you've heard anything about that or not.
Gentlemen, Patriot Act 3, what have you heard?
I don't know anything about it.
I know. I thought they were just trying to redo the Patriot Act right now. That's what's going on right now. But I don't know about if it's number 3 or just redoing number 2. I don't know.
Okay, next question.
That's the only one I had.
Okay, Gary. Thanks for calling. All right, let's take Rodney from Texas. Hi, you're on Uncensored Radio Free America. Hello?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Yes, hi, Christopher Bolin and Eric, how are you guys this evening?
Good, thanks.
Yeah, I really appreciate this because just today, and by the way, I want to tell you guys that you guys are keeping pressure on these people because... I just seen or read a story off of the Associated Press today that was written, and it suggests that the intense fires from the airplanes, you know, the airplane fuel, that it burnt the staircase and caused the some of those 47 supporting beams to collapse. And so, therefore, it said the construction of the building was faulty, and this led to the majority of the individuals in the upper regions of the Twin Towers losing their lives. Well, we know that's not true, number one, because of the information that Eric has brought out in his book, and number two, because of information that you brought out, Christopher. I mean, Mr. Bolin, but I just want to commend you guys because what this tells me is that people are waking up and that you guys are keeping pressure on the people, you know, the what I call the real culprits, the real murderers, the criminals of 9/11, and that there's a lot of pressure being put on. The truth is coming out, and I just hope that you guys don't let up.
Yeah, but what you need to realize is it's not just me and Christopher. It's the people that take our material and show it to their friends. If nobody ever looked at my book, it would be meaningless. It's only because people buy it and then show their friends or take it to work. And they, you know, the same with Christopher's articles. If you don't pass them around and let people know, then we have no effect. It's really the people that are taking
right.
this information and
word
getting it out there.
Word of mouth. And by the way, I want to, according to this, to try to validate the story, they claim that the this agency called they said it was the NIST. Yeah, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, that they claim that those buildings were built faulty and the staircasing was faulty, so therefore those people would have died anyway. But according to some information I've seen off of Infowars.com and Infowars.tv, the firemen that day claimed that they had nearly put out just about every fire in that building.
Oh, yeah. The NIST report is only to, it's again, it's like they're feeling the pressure and they're trying again to cover it up. It's like another Popular Mechanics type article.
Yeah, so they're another organ of the government and they're just following orders. But once again, because of the Radio Avenger and also people spreading in for this good information that you guys are putting out, word of mouth, it's having an effect. And I hope soon that these murderers will be brought to justice. But I want to commend you guys, and please keep up the good work.
Thank you very much, brother. Okay, Rodney from Texas, always a good call. You can call, too, at 800-313-9443. And, of course, we'll be coming up against a break in a couple of minutes again, but then we'll have about 20 minutes or so just to be able to chat. So we have plenty of time to talk in this hour. And I want to concentrate on another aspect of the official 9/11 story that we were told about, certain flights and the Pentagon and so forth. But let me just ask you quickly, one of you, perhaps you, Chris, as far as the whole purpose of taking over a publication like this particular one, Popular Mechanics, what do you think was the main purpose in mind? I mean, they could have done it with any other publication, right?
Well, they want to reach a specific targeted audience, and that would be men and young men who are military-minded. Popular Mechanics has always had an audience of military-minded, scientifically-minded young men,
right.
And they want to focus on this group because they want to push their military technology. There's been a great deal of that, as usual, and at the same time, they want to try and debunk discredit people like Eric Hushman and I, because they want to reach out to this scientific audience, this technologically minded young male, and make an imprint on that person.
There you go, the demographics again, right?
Sure.
Okay, all right. Now, hold on, because we're going to take our midway break, and I want to give you plenty of time to discuss with me an aspect of the 9/11 situation that we need to talk about, and that's what allegedly took place at the Pentagon. Rick Adams, Uncensored, Radio Free America. We'll be right back with more.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
The Radio Avenger gets even better.
Uncensored Radio Free America.
Rick Adams is turned on.
On the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Yes, sir. Hey, we're turned on to the truth, and that's all we want is nothing but the truth. And I'm afraid these days you're not going to find it in publications like PM, Popular Mechanics. You know, gentlemen, it's funny we should bring this up, because I happen to have a list, quite a repertoire of publications, one in particular, that goes back to the 1960s, and it probably had its finest editor then. And the publication was Analog. I'm sure you're familiar with it. And it's, well, its editor was a man by the name of John W. Campbell. Were you familiar with him?
No, actually, I'm not. Are you, Christopher?
No.
Well, John W. Campbell was one heck of a very, very ahead of his time conservative type of editor, writing in the 1960s in a science fiction magazine. And here he was writing editorials, and he was writing about everything from civil rights fiasco to the whole idea of race and reason and controversial subjects where he would probably be called today a total a nutcase, a skinhead, a racist, a homophobe, whatever. But here was a man that was doing all of this in a publication where you'd least expect to find it. He was doing the reverse now of what's happened to popular mechanics. And he was very popular in his way. And, of course, a number of science fiction writers like Poul Anderson and others would also write their stories in there. But here was a way, an avenue of a person with a similar point of view as ours, expressing it through a publication that you'd normally go to for science fiction, Analog. And I thought that was an interesting thing that I should have brought out to you. But anyway, we have people on the line waiting to talk to you. However, before we get to them, and I promise you, James and others, I will get to you. This whole episode of the Pentagon and the idea that Flight 77 was commandeered and that plane, that passenger plane, was flown into the Pentagon is one of the most controversial aspects of this whole 9/11 story. And, of course, Eric, you have dealt with this extensively in your publication and your video on painful questions and analysis. Now, I've been reading other publications for the last several years, and one in particular in which the editors were concerned with some crazy conspiracy theories on whether a plane actually hit the building or not. And one of the people they suggested was crazy and conspiratorial was this individual from France, and I'm sure you're familiar with him, Terry Messian.
Right.
What do you make of that particular author, his situation, his going back and forth with the government, and the charges that that he's a little bit off his rocker?
Well, his original accusation was that a truck bomb went off in front of the building, and it was later that, you know, right pretty much after that, that the Pentagon released those five images from the security camera that showed something flying into it. So he then changed it to maybe a cruise missile or something hit it.
Mm-hmm.
So originally he did actually think nothing flew into it at all. It was a truck bomb, and that's where that comes from. But now that there's more evidence available, what it looks like is that something did fly into it, but it was not a big commercial plane.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the seismic data, there were several seismic stations around, and they don't show any large airplane crash either. In fact, they don't even show any airplane crash. So something's flying into it, but whatever it is, it's small and lightweight, and that may not even hit in time. Maybe it blows up before it hits. So,
well, the reason why I bring it up is because the government was concerned enough to try to answer Mr. Messian's claims and to try to create the impression, at least the so-called evidence that they said existed, that the commercial jetliner was flown into the building. Now, of course, one of the things they produced, as you know, was some passengers' body parts. What do you make of that?
Well, they didn't actually produce it. They just said they've identified them.
That's
all
what they said. They said,
but they never actually. Yeah, no one's ever actually seen anything. And that when they sent the dog in to help find survivors, the dog always on every photo has a blank expression on his face, as if he never even picked up the scent of any of those 64 people. Now you got to picture the 64 people in one little tiny area of the Pentagon, and the dog can't find even a piece.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the shuttle, when it blew up and went flying all over the whole nation, there's pieces all over the place, even pieces of their body. And yet we can't find the passengers or their luggage or the pieces of the airplane in that tiny little area?
This is the point that I think I'm trying to make here, and that is that rather than actually showing us the evidence, it was the government that claimed the evidence that passenger remains indeed had been found.
Exactly.
Okay, that's the important distinction. It's one thing to state it. It's another thing to bring reporters in, to show the American public, to say, look, this is what we have. These are certifiably the remains of so-and-so passengers who were obviously supposed to have been on board this flight. And that's very important because, you see, you take someone like Amessian and others who have come up, and David Icke's name comes up, and others who get into the flying saucer thing, get into the mysteries of astronomy, and then tie it all into 9/11. And then the government and Chertoff and people like this turn around and say, you see, these are the people that believe that it had to be government and no one else. I mean, they're trying to do an apologia for Al-Qaeda. This is what they do. This is exactly their modus operandi, isn't it?
Right. Yeah, they'll pick on the people that fall for the Martian business and the UFO stuff.
Yeah, David Icke and company, right.
And you
exactly.
See, that's also what Art Bell is pushing. Do you see the connection here?
Right, exactly.
And you'll see the pattern after a while. What they push are all the stupid things. They deny all the stuff that's true, and then if you accidentally fall for one of their stupid things, then they can ridicule you.
And this is why I always try to stay away from theories and possible explanations, because I don't think the burden is on anyone but the government. And I've said right from day one, it's the government which must prove its conspiracy, and so far it hasn't proved one leg of it yet. And this is the thing, no convictions, absolutely, in fact, Supreme Court decisions now reversing the government's claims about Al-Qaeda holding prisoners without any charges, torturing them. You know, each and every day we add the pieces of the puzzle, and here, lo and behold, the government's whole theory just seems to be shattered, you know, just totally shattered to pieces.
Right. And, well, see, this is the thing. When people tell us we're supposed to prove that Flight 77 never hit, I mean, it's not our responsibility. They have to prove that it did.
That it did, yeah.
People have to realize that. It's like when someone steals your car, you don't have to prove that someone stole it and what they did with it. All you have to say is, look, it's gone. Where is it? You know, I mean, you don't have to solve the crime. You don't have to prove it's up to them to prove where Flight 77 is. It's up to them to release those security camera videos, all the confiscated photos, you know, all the data that shows here it is. Where's Barbara Olson's body, for example? Did they give that a burial? Did they give that back to Ted Olson?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, where is all this, and why are they holding all the security camera video if they really have it?
And then, Eric, you had brought out originally something so shocking that others have brought out, obviously, and that is the fact that all of the steel, all of the girders, in fact, were contrabanded. They were all seized. All of the evidence was taken from the scene and then shipped overseas. And that, to me, was an eye-raiser, to say the least.
Well, especially when you consider Fire Engineering Magazine, which is a magazine for firefighters, the editor wrote about this, and he says he even looked through all the laws trying to find an exception to the rule. And he says there's no exception. When you have a big fire in a big building, that's evidence of the fire. That's evidence of what brought the building down, and it's supposed to be saved. And he says there's no exception that he can find.
Yes,
and he
absolutely.
Even, it's like published in a magazine, and he's calling on the government to stop the destruction. But it's the same thing that happened to General Parton when he said, don't destroy the Oklahoma City building.
Oh, absolutely.
And they just ignored him
about that. Yeah. Yeah.
They ignored him and destroyed it and then buried it.
Yeah, and the same type of nonsense was given as a rationale. And, of course, one of the things they said was we didn't want the people to have to go by that scene and see that horrible sight and remember it all over again. I mean, talk about lame excuses and nonsense, and this is exactly what the United States government is peddling. All right, let's take another call now. 800-313-9443. 800-313-9443. Thanks for waiting, James from Austin. You're next on the program.
Eric, I want to give a plug for Eric's video and book. I got the video, and it's fantastic. Everybody should get that. And
yes,
I agree that people should distribute it. I wish I could, but my wife didn't like me doing that.
Like you doing that.
Well, she's concerned about our safety and
your
our
safety,
house
yeah.
getting burned down and all that, you know, by the by the cockroaches. Anyway, I got an important question. It's kind of an important part of the puzzle that I keep hearing different things about, and it's the 8-second thing.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard from different sources, even a fire chief that I saw on A&E Channel's Anatomy of September 11th, there was a fire chief that said the North Tower collapsed in 8 seconds, and I've heard it from other sources like Alex Jones and George Humphreys, and that makes sense to me. But then I also watched the video and counted it myself, and it looked more like 11 seconds, but I thought, well, maybe the extra 3 seconds is behind the smoke that I can't, you know, really tell. so I wasn't sure. But if you hear it from a fire chief, that sounds legitimate. But I saw a website that they have this stuff, you know, they have clips of videos where they have like 7 seconds and it goes down to 13 seconds. And now, is there any official, so-called
yes.
official source that says exactly when each tower?
Yes, there is.
Clear that up.
Yes.
In other words, it'd be like a mainstream official source?
Yes, there is. The
the
building performance assessment done by the FEMA, American Society of Civil Engineers, the BPAT report that was done in early 2002, Dr. Gene Corley was the head of that. They have broken each collapse down. The North Tower collapsed in 8 seconds, the South Tower collapsed in 10 seconds, and the World Trade Center number 7 collapsed, I think, in 18 seconds.
Okay, so the 8 seconds
evidence.
So the 8 seconds is a solid fact.
Well, it's also going by seismic data, 8 point something or other seconds
okay.
is what they're looking at. That's where it's
well, then these other things I'm hearing, so when if I'm talking to somebody trying to explain the idea that 8 seconds defies Newton's law of gravity, then...
No, it doesn't. It's 8 point something seconds, and it actually, if you calculate from where it started, it is 8 point something seconds. That is how fast that object's fall, because the collapse started at about the 90th floor. You'll see that in my video.
But the thing is, Eric, is that the North Tower began collapsing, and you see that the communications tower begins to fall. That's the full 415 meters.
Right.
And it would take 9.25 seconds for an object to fall from the communication tower level.
Yeah, that's another thing you have to remember. It's where you want to start the collapse from. Do you want to start it from when the tower, that top tower, like he just said, if you want to start from there, then you have to add a little time to it.
Right.
So
that's why I'm thinking that in George Humphrey's video, I don't want to take away from your video, Eric, but in his video, he mentioned if you go with the 9 second statement about, you know, where it should begin, then that explains that there had to be high-level military explosives in there to pull the building down because of the vacuum that they create, and that's why it fell faster. If you see it from the 9 second point, that it fell faster than Newton's law of gravity, and that's. To me, that's a compelling point if you're trying to talk to somebody, but I wanted to make sure that I'm saying the right thing when I say 8 seconds.
Well, it wouldn't necessarily, it wouldn't fall faster than gravity unless something's pushing it down like explosives.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it'd have to be on top of it, but you see, when you're talking about...
The vacuum thing doesn't work as far as...
Well, I mean, theoretically, if you put explosives above a steel beam, it'll push it down faster, but you see, the biggest problem you have when you talk about a collapse of a building is when does it start and when does it end? Because there's pieces all over the place.
That's true.
And they don't just fall down at one time. And the collapse, like, you can start it from when the building starts to fall or when the tower antenna starts shaking.
Has anybody done a structural model on how long it would take for the floors to physically naturally collapse floor by floor?
They don't naturally collapse.
I mean, has anybody done a structural engineering model to show how long it would take if it did fall the way they said it fell?
You mean the pancake effect?
Right, right. Would that be like 30 seconds or a minute or 2 minutes?
There's no way to predict it. I mean, if you pick one floor hitting another floor, that's what they say is one floor fell down, hit the floor below it. And then floors then hit the floor. I mean, if you add 1 second per floor, that's 110.
That's 100 seconds, right. I did my own little quick thing. And I don't know if we're all if we have engineering and physics stuff going on here that I'm not aware of, but isn't there a stop in time between floors?
There's a delay. As it first hits, it's going to slow down as it crushes the floor below it. Assuming it even has the power to crush, which it wouldn't.
If you look at
the Madrid fire, some of those floors collapsed, and all I did is create some junk on the floor below it.
Right.
You know, when a floor falls down, it doesn't just pulverize the one below it.
Exactly. Plus, it doesn't create a crystalline molecular concrete, you know.
Doesn't turn it all to powder. So the whole thing's a fake, but you have to be vague. You can't say it's specifically 8.4 seconds to collapse. I mean, it's vague as to when it started and when it ended. It's just about 8.4 seconds.
Well, I mean, it's safe to say 8-something seconds as opposed to 12 or 13 seconds.
Right.
And that's what I feel comfortable saying when I'm talking to people. I just want to make sure that there is a definite source for that. I'm going to take a little more time. You got other callers, and I really appreciate your help.
Good questions, James. Thank you very much from Austin. Yeah.
Bye-bye.
All right. Anyone else would like to get in quickly? We still have a little time for you. 800-9443. I'm Rick Adams.
Radio Avenger, and we're speaking with Eric Hufschmidt tonight, researcher on 9/11, and Christopher Bolin from the American Free Press. So while we have time before a break, let me do this. Let me give each of you an opportunity to plug yourselves. I believe you, Eric, have a website, don't you, and a way to get your materials.
Oh, yeah, the easiest way is just to go to hugequestions.com. That's the easiest one to remember.
Hugequestions.com, huh?
Right, and that'll take you to the – there's some free videos there you can watch if it hasn't been overloaded. Or you can it'll take you to my main site, erichufschmidt.net, which is just too hard to spell. And you can get DVDs like by the six-pack, a six-pack with shipping for $24. So you can get them – it's like $4 a piece.
Right, right.
And that's with shipping. So, I mean, this way you can have yourself a little conspiracy party and spread the information around.
Yeah, and, of course, the American Free Press online portions of it, you can go there tonight or tomorrow, anytime online, AmericanFreePress.net. And then, of course, people can subscribe and should subscribe to this weekly publication and get a trial for, I guess it's $17.76 is all it is for a trial subscription. And they can do that by dialing 888-699-NEWS. Is that right, Christopher Bolin?
That's right. And I want to, before the hour's up, I want to get one point in here.
Oh, sure.
Ariel Sharon, the Prime Minister of Israel, is coming next week. And in the last week, I focused on some of these software companies that have been involved in September 11th and allegedly and whatnot. And this week I'm focusing on the Mossad, the Israeli intelligence connection to September 11th.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the most neglected aspect in the mainstream media. There's a ton of evidence, a preponderance of evidence that points to Israeli secret intelligence being involved in the events of September 11th. And in my mind, they are the most likely suspect.
Very interesting. All right, we'll pursue that on the other side of this break. Our program will continue. Uncensored Radio Free America. I'm Rick Adams. Stay tuned. Okay, hey, we're back very quickly because we got about three people or so online that want to get through and not much time, so I'm going to ask each of you to make your questions as brief and pointed as possible to our guests, Eric Hufschmidt and Christopher Bolin. All right, let's do that then while we round out the program. And we've got, I think it's Nikki in Austin. Hello, on the program.
Hello?
Nikki, are you there? Hello.
This is Julius.
Okay, well, Julius is next. All right, that's you then in Arizona. Julius, go right ahead. Question?
Yeah, a quick comment. The problem I see with the world, attack on the Pentagon is some people claim that something did hit the Pentagon at a very high rate of speed, like maybe close to 400 or 500 miles an hour, and it turned all the aircraft structure into confetti, basically, and I know that happens at super high speeds, but that would negate the possibility that junior pilot that allegedly hijacked Flight 77 could have flown that plane at that speed and accurately hit something. It would have had to have been a remote-controlled aircraft, maybe an A3 Sky Warrior or something similar to that.
Okay, gentlemen, a comment on that?
Well, if it turned to confetti, that would mean 60 tons of confetti, and that's an enormous pile, and you can't find any of it in the photos. All you find is a tiny little engine that's the size of what they put in a Global Hawk and a couple other tiny little scraps, and there's no bodies, no luggage. So there's no sign. There's a sign that something hit it. It looks like one engine, and it's something small and quiet because there's no one talking about the noise either. There's not much reports about incredible noises or the vibrations of the engines or... So it looks like something small and quiet, like a drone, computer-controlled drone.
Okay. All right. Thank you. We've got Joe here in Rhode Island. Hello, Joe. You're on the program. That's you, Joe.
Hi, Eric.
Hello.
Eric, I drive professionally in New York City, and I go constantly up and down the West Side Highway. Of course, you know that the North Tower proceeds immediately from the sidewalk of the West Side Highway straight up. You're aware of that?
Well, no, go ahead. What's the point?
Okay. Here's the situation. If that building goes straight up in the air from the West Side Highway, If that building of, what, 120 floors?
110.
A pancake like the news media showed us. It came down all around the surrounding area.
Right.
Should have come out maybe 50 yards in every direction, maybe even more, with steel and concrete and everything else. There's two crosswalks at the base of the building, about 10 feet off the about 20 feet off the ground.
Right, the elevated one.
Crossing the West Side Highway.
Right.
I noticed many times that there were just ding marks in it. They were never replaced. There were just ding marks in it. It was all metal. It's like sheet metal. People walk across it. You know, when that building fell, I said to myself, I said, that had to have destroyed those. These were right up against the building.
And?
So in other words, it tells me that that building went the other way. That building did not fall down the way the news media showed us.
What?
Those were all false impressions.
Well, right. That's exactly true. Because, I mean, if you look at those, there's photos of that walkway, that elevated walkway, and it hasn't even been crushed much.
Right.
And so, and here's buildings 1,000 feet up in the air falling down, and it doesn't even break these things up. It was fell so perfectly. There's no way to explain this.
All of you made excellent points. Joe, thank you. Guys, we're out of time, unfortunately. We'll do it again sometime. Thank you so much. All right. Hey, that's the end. Tomorrow night, we'll be back again with another exciting program of Uncensored Radio Free America. Until then, Rick Adams, take care.